You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Bricklayers and Allied Crafts Workers, Local 15, and Communications Workers, Local 6360. Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers, Local 15, says, in unity, there is strength. Please support workers' rights. Back, Local 15, Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska. And the Communications Workers of America, Local 6360, represents approximately 1,000 members in telecommunications, law enforcement, printing, screen printing, and commercial sound systems in the Kansas City and St. Joseph area. Local 6360 partners with other unions and affiliations to improve working conditions for all workers in the area and fight anti-labor legislation in the Kansas and Missouri state capitals. The Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, last month, Missouri Labor and its allies shocked the nation with a 2-1 vote on Proposition A against it, repealing the right-to-work law passed by the legislature. How did they do it, and what lessons does this victory teach us? This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, in fact, tonight on the Heartland Labor Forum, we'll talk to activists and find out. In the news, lots of court action. CWA sues the sheriff and state labor department. Missouri court deciding whether Clean Missouri Amendment stays on the ballot or goes. And McDonald's workers filing sexual harassment charges. Our feature at the end of the show is Know Your Rights with Angie Williams. She'll talk about the right to strike. Now for the news.
Last week, Judge James F. Knatzer of the Circuit Court of Jackson County issued a temporary restraining order in the case of Rebecca Carney and Johnny Miller against the Missouri Department of Labor and Industrial Relations and Jackson County Sheriff Daryl Forte. Carney and Miller are dispatchers in the Sheriff's Department and members of CWA Local 6360. They are also on the bargaining team that is about to begin bargaining the Workers' Collective Bargaining Agreement. This will be the first time they will bargain under House Bill 1413, which was enacted this year. HB 1413 makes it illegal for workers to engage in any kind of picketing on pain of immediate firing, and Carney and Miller sued because HB 1413 is a clear violation of their rights to freedom of speech and their rights under the Missouri Constitution to collective bargaining. The judge agreed and issued the temporary restraining order, which will last until the end of September, allowing Missouri Attorney General Josh Hawley or his assistant to submit arguments as to why an injunction should not be issued. It could then be appealed. Attorney John Boyd, who represents Carney and Miller, says his clients had a small bargaining unit. One of the tools that would help the union and these individuals on the bargaining committee would be informational picketing, but they'd get fired from their jobs if they picketed. Deputy Attorney General Ryan Bangert argued that the union members could picket about other issues, but he couldn't come up with any examples of what issues. Judge Knatzer asked if workers who were not union members can picket on personal or employment issues and was told yes. So he asked, does this mean they have to make a choice between benefits of belonging to a union or their First Amendment rights? Bangert said yes. He added that it is public policy in the state of Missouri that there shall be no picketing by public employees. Boyd concluded, I interpret the state's view of this to discourage participation in unions. It's clear to me that they're saying don't join a union and we will not regulate your speech. Other parts of HB 1413 are being challenged by mainly teacher unions in St. Louis. Stay tuned.
In a St. Louis suburb, they chanted, hold your burgers, hold your fries, keep your hands off of my thighs. In Chicago, they had a blue duct tape over each person's mouth that said Me Too, covering their mouths. In Kansas City, Missouri, they held signs bearing the same anti-sexual harassment hashtag with the first letter styled to look like the McDonald's golden arches. That's how the cover story in the New York Times business section began on Tuesday's strike by fast food workers against sexual harassment at McDonald's and other fast food chains. Workers struck 10 cities demanding that the company do more to combat sexual harassment. Specifically, they wanted better training, a better reporting system, and a workers' committee to investigate each harassment claim. Here in Kansas City, about 70 workers went on strike all over the metro area. There was a rally of a couple hundred people in front of the McDonald's on Troost and Meyer Boulevard, where McDonald's worker Kimberly Lawson talked about her case against the company specifically for sexual harassment. Her manager hit on her, made lewd comments, told her to dump her boyfriend, and she said that she had felt very trapped. She's one of 10 McDonald's workers supported by the Fight for 15 Union and Times Legal Defense Funds, who makes up the EEOC complaints in May for the sexual harassment claim against supervisors in retaliation for complaining. In a statement, McDonald's said that it takes issue seriously was introducing additional measures to provide further protections for workers. The company declined to comment on active litigation. However, one Kansas City worker, Nikisha Eubanks, told the New York Times that they've said that there will be training and we haven't received any training. There's actually nothing being done. A lawyer for the women disputes the training and thinks that if it exists, it's only for supervisors. She said, when we first met some of these workers, they didn't even know that the conduct they were tolerating was unlawful, and they had no idea, and that they unsuccessfully approached managers that were being told that they didn't have anything that they could do about it. The company that McDonald's claimed to have engaged was RAIN. That's the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, and they said that they only had preliminary discussions with McDonald's, nothing further.
Clean Missouri was in the courts again today after a Cole County judge ruled it off the ballot earlier this week. Clean is Amendment 1 on the November ballot in Missouri. It would limit campaign contributions to candidates for state legislature, limit lobbyist gifts to $5, end gerrymandering of legislative and senatorial districts, make former state reps and senators wait longer to become lobbyists, and provide more transparency in legislative activities. On Wednesday, Judy Ansel ran into Sean Nicholson at a press conference and gathering of activists downtown. Sean heads the campaign for Clean, and we asked him a few questions about the court hearing and who wants to kick Clean off the ballot.
We're here to call attention to the handful of lobbyists that are trying to keep Amendment 1 off the ballot. It's no coincidence that the primary lawyer who's driving the lawsuit to get Amendment 1 off the ballot is one of the lobbyists for Eric Greitens. As a part of that whole crew, he's joined in the lawsuit by the top lobbyist for the Missouri Chamber, and hit that lobbyist attorney is the lawyer for the state's top donor. So it's a small handful of folks who are trying to protect a corrupt system, and we're gonna stop them, and we're gonna take back the state.
What is that lawyer's name?
So the lawyer here in Kansas City is Eddie Grime. So Eddie Grime was one of the lobbyists for Governor Greitens. And then Dan Meehan is the lobbyist for the chamber. And then Mark Ellinger is the lobbyist for Meehan and the lawyer for Rex Siegfeld.
There's a court hearing tomorrow. Can you explain what it's about?
Yeah. So these lobbyists sued to keep Amendment 1 off the ballot to void the signatures of 300,000 Missourians. We are here for an appeal. We are back on the ballot. A stay was issued of an initial court ruling, and Amendment 1 is back on the ballot, and then we're here in a court hearing to make that permanent and make it official for November.
Did the judge who's going to hear the case tomorrow, is he the one who issued the stay?
The stay was issued by the Court of Appeals. There's going to be be a panel of judges who are part of the Court of Appeals who are hearing the case in downtown Kansas City on Thursday.
It was kicked off the ballot because supposedly it has more than one subject. What's your argument against that?
So I'm going to read from a brief that was filed by Attorney General Hawley. The Assistant Attorney General stood right beside the attorney for the campaign, and we argued the exact same thing, that this is a single subject piece. So reading from the brief filed by Hawley, the measure, Amendment 1, if enacted by the voters, would promote transparency and accountability in the General Assembly. The plaintiffs, the plaintiffs here are the lobbyists, claims fail on the merits, and the Secretary of State properly certified the measure for the ballot.
When can we expect a decision from this court?
We may have a decision by the time this interview airs, but I think we're going to have clarity here in the next couple days, and then it's on to November.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The news tonight was read by Brian Simmons, Katie Graham, and I'm Jen Zaman.
Listen up, we've got a war zone here today right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us, fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers, and it's time we started calling the shots.
And that's, of course, Ann Feeney with War on the Workers, and I'm Judy Ansel. For years, I used to say that when you look at a map of the Midwest, right-to-work states, Missouri sticks into them like a thumb plugging a hole in a wall, leaking something toxic. Only Illinois behind us helps us make a fist. Missouri is surrounded, and as the war on workers escalated, the poison spread to Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin between 2012 and 2017. In 2016, hardcore anti-worker Governor Eric Greitens was elected on a flood of Trump votes in Missouri. Next, the Republican-dominated legislature, bathed in lots of dark money from corporate interests, almost immediately passed a right-to-work law. It was signed by Greitens on February 7, 2017, and supposed to go into effect August 28th of that year, making Missouri the 28th right-to-work state. However, Missourians have an unusual constitutional right that allows for a citizen's veto of unpopular laws. The state's unions sprang into action with a petition drive to gather enough signatures to put it to a popular vote. The first sign that this would be historic came on August 18th, when labor turned in 310,567 signatures, three times the number required to place the referendum on the November 2018 ballot. And by 2018, Republicans in the legislature were in a quandary. Should they let the vote happen in November and risk a victory by Senator Claire McCaskill because union supporters would turn out to vote no on right to work and then vote for her too? Or should they move the election to the August 7th primary, where labor would have to turn out fewer people to win? They decided on August 7th during the last week of the session in May. The election occurred on August 7th, and of course, the results were astounding. We Are Missouri, the union-led Vote No on A campaign, won with 67.46% of the vote. So, how did they achieve such a magnificent rout of the Republican agenda? It certainly wasn't just by talking to union members and families, which of course they did. To help us figure out how labor won this fight and what we can learn from it, are Richard Von Glahn from Missouri Jobs with Justice on the phone with us from St. Louis, Sharon Pettiford, formerly CWA, now with the AFL-CIO, Brian Simmons, a member of Machinists Local 778, and Katie Graham, who was the Western Director for the We Are Missouri campaign. So let me start with you, Richard. Tell us, and I want each of you to tell us what your role in the campaign was. You want to go ahead, Richard?
Sure. So I served as the Coalition Outreach Director, working to make sure that the community knew about Proposition A and helping equip communities to be able to speak to their members about what the harmful effects of Proposition A would be for them.
Okay, thanks. How about you, Katie?
Hi, guys. Yeah, my name is Katie Graham, and I was a regional field director through Weir, Missouri, and I was in charge of the three counties of Ray, Clay, and then Platt. And just furthering what Richard said, our goal was to just talk to every single voter that we could about Proposition A and the harmful detriments.
Okay, Sharon?
Hello, my name is Sharon Pettiford. I was the field organizer for the Missouri AFL-CIO assigned to Proposition A. I was assigned to the Labor to Labor program.
Explain what's Labor to Labor?
We ran a Labor to Labor program internally. We ran an internal program.
So this was unions talking to their own members?
Yes, member to member.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And Brian?
Yeah, my name is Brian Simmons. I originally came out as release staff with the Missouri AFL-CIO, working hand-in-hand with Sharon Pettiford, doing the internal member-to-member program. And as we stood up the We Are Missouri campaign, I transitioned into a regional field director for Jackson County here in Kansas City area. So,
okay. So you guys actually were key people in this campaign, every one of you. And I know there were a lot more, but... I sure want to thank you for all the work you did. When did the campaign actually start, Brian?
If you ask me, I'd say February 6, 2017.
When they passed the bill?
Exactly. Yeah. We knew that our state fed, the Missouri AFL-CIO, under the vision and guidance of Mike Lewis, they were ready to go. They went down and filed with the Secretary of State's office as soon as they possibly could and got the ball rolling on.
But you didn't really know when the election was going to be until May of this year, right?
Well, no. They filed for petition language so that we could start circulating the petition process last year. That led to qualifying with the 310,567 signatures. We then took a little bit of time to regroup and plan for this and that contingency, and this year we kicked off pretty early, right out of the chute, with what we were going to do to go forward, messaging and assembling the team of folks around the state to do the field work.
Okay. So, Katie, the campaign was called We Are Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think a lot of people at first were kind of amazed that all the unions in Missouri, despite histories of many differences, mm-hmm. actually got together and had one campaign organization. How was it structured?
Yeah, absolutely. So the structure went from, obviously, like Brian said, Mike Lewis. So we had heavy influence of National AFL. And then from there, we had Ryan Burke, who was our campaign manager. And we had two deputies, the Eastern, which was David Sperry, and then we had Zach Sweets over on the Western side of the half of the state. And I worked directly under Zach. So underneath the deputy, we had the regional field directors. And those are the people who, I mean, Judah came out and canvassed for us multiple times.
Yeah, sure did.
Exactly. Yeah, Sharon, too. All of us have been out there knocking doors. But we were the people who really coordinated that effort with the volunteer base. And I know Ryan Burke and everybody else and Sharon, they did a lot of the internal work. Since I'm not in union, I didn't really know that side, but I learned so much from coming in and seeing how that direction was causal effect to the name of We Are Missouri, because it wasn't just labor to labor. We really impacted the entire state and had, you know, a plethora of type of people to come in and work. It wasn't just people like me who are paid and have been working on political campaigns for, you know, several years. It was a lot of people like Brian who came out as release staff and decided that this is something that they believe it's worth fighting for. So,
And of course, there were a ton of volunteers.
Yes, a ton.
Most of the volunteers actually union members, or were there a lot of people who were volunteers who didn't belong to unions?
So I think we had a great mix.
Really?
We really did. We did an awesome job. With going to the community.
Uh-huh.
So I think we had a really great mix.
Okay. Richard, You're a strategy guy. Can you kind of, in a nutshell, explain what the strategy of the campaign was?
Sure. I think that one of the most important things about the strategy is that we talked to everybody. You know, there were going to be people who wanted to paint this as just an issue that would impact union members, or that this would be an issue that maybe only Democrats would care about. But the reality was that everyone in this state had something to lose if Proposition A passed. So we made a very deliberate plan to not just talk to union members, but talk to our neighbors, talk to the folks that we go to church with, reach out into our communities and not make assumptions about anybody. But when you start talking to people about how Proposition A would just drive down wages, not just for union members, but for everyone in the state, and what that continuing hauling out of the middle class would mean in terms of our economy and in terms of our communities, what you really saw is the entire community understand that and rise up and vote against Proposition A. I think that was a absolutely critical decision made by the campaign early on, that we knew our opponents were going to try to frame this as an issue that only impacted union members. And union members, we only make up about 9-10% of the state. So we had to be very deliberate about making sure that the community knew what was at stake, and clearly they did.
Okay, let me put you on the spot, Sharon. give me the rap. Okay, so I just opened my door to you. What was the rap?
Hi, Judy.
Hi.
I am a volunteer with We Are Missouri, and I'm just coming out here to talk to you face-to-face to know if you had already heard, had you heard about the primary election on August the 7th?
Oh, sure. They have one every few years, right?
Well, great. Have you heard about Proposition A?
What's that?
Proposition A it has to deal with working families.
No.
And it has to do with the old right to work.
I know what that messaging is.
Was right to work.
Yeah.
And so with right to work in states that have right to work, they make on average of almost $9,000 less.
Really?
Right. And yeah. I don't know about you, but I can't.
Where do you get that kind of information?
The U.S. Census Bureau.
Really?
Yeah.
$9,000 less in states that are right to work?
I know, it's overwhelming, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that it doesn't matter whether I'm union or not, I'm going to be affected, or people in my family might be affected by right to work.
Yes, this affects everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because when I first heard the rap, I said, well, but we're not explaining to people what right to work is. And, you know, I know what right to work is, but, you know, it's a really wonky issue,
right.
You know. And how did you deal with that, Brian?
We tried really hard when we reached out. As the We Are Missouri campaign, we tried to stay away from right to work messaging because we were really targeting general public voters that had a history of voting in August primaries.
Mm-hmm.
That was our group. We didn't want to get into the weeds on right to work. So we would talk Prop A, and we would give all of the statistics, and we would explain who we were, and we would just ask for their support. More often than not, with the petitions and that whole process last year, folks, as soon as we would get into the numbers spiel, would go, is this the right to work thing?
Yeah, right.
And so it would kind of blow the whole messaging out of the water. But as soon as you identified with them that, yes, they're tied together, this year it'll be known as Prop A. It'll be right. The first issue question on the ballot. And we're asking you to please vote no in support of us in your own livelihood as a worker here in the state of Missouri. It didn't matter how you voted on the rest of the ticket. This didn't seem to be a partisan issue. We made an appeal to people, and clearly the numbers reflected that was a good strategy.
Yeah. Well, clearly it does. And I just want to give some of the numbers and then get your reactions to it. First off, the Proposition AA lost with a greater percentage of no votes than the celebrated 1978 Missouri right to work fight, even though union density, there were far fewer union members in the state this year than there were in 1978. Yet, you know, I think that one won by 60%. The labor won by 60%, and this year it was 67%. That's one thing. Secondly, right to work led increased voter turnout because there were 100,000 more votes on the right to work proposal than there were people voting on the primary candidates. So pretty clearly, people came out to vote on right to work, and then they also voted for Claire or Josh Hawley or whoever was on the ballot as a candidate. Thirdly, even if no Missouri union members, and there's a quarter of a million of them, voted on the right to work proposal, it still would have been defeated. So we won this thing without needing the votes of union members. It's estimated that 30 to 50% of the no votes were on Republican ballots, Republican primary ballots. And finally, in 2016, Missouri went 56 to 38% for Trump versus Hillary Clinton, with only four counties voting a majority for Clinton. This time, 102 of Missouri's 115 counties voted no on right to work, with only 13 counties voting yes. Or 15, yeah, that's right, 13 counties voting yes. And just as an example, Cass County, just south of Kansas City, went for Trump 65% to 29% in 2016. But on the August 7th ballot, 66% of Cass Countyans voted no on Proposition A. And, you know, that's really counterintuitive because you think, okay, so it's highly Republican in Cass County. They're going to be for right to work. And, in fact, two-thirds of them were not for right to work. So I want to ask any one of you, and I'll start with Richard because you can't use hand signals because you're on the phone. Give us a comment on this to help us understand these phenomenal results.
So I think this gets to our point about the strategy, about not making assumptions about people and just going out and talking to people. You know, whether you are a Republican or a Democrat, you cannot in Missouri, like, no one's going to vote to see a pay cut for themselves or for their neighbors. And I think what was different about Proposition A than maybe sometimes with candidates is with candidates, sometimes people feel different ways. Cynicism can creep in about what a candidate says and what a candidate really does. Proposition A was very clear. We were able to put very clear information that was sourced from nonpartisan sources, the Census Bureau, Bureau of Labor Statistics, and people could look at it and just know, okay, if we vote for this law, this is what's going to happen in this state. And when they looked at that and they looked at states like Oklahoma, Kansas, and saw what was happening to working families there and what was happening to economies there, they just said, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Katie, you got anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Richard is absolutely spot on. That is what we debriefed about every single day. It's exactly what we started the day off. How are we going to be able to communicate with voters here? And I think, you know, tackling another one of Richard's points, correct, spot on. When you have a candidate versus a nonpartisan issue, people are going to have a confirmed bias. When it comes to being able to feed your family or pay rent or pay health insurance, it's not a question. You're going to do what is best. And I think that that's the distinction that we can all come to when we compare 2018 and our amazing and phenomenal results that we had down the ballot compared to 2016. People traditionally vote against their self-interest because they just expect they voted someone to go into Jefferson City to do what's best for them, when in all reality, the research and the education is not there. There's not a foundation. I think that's really what the strategy was educating the voter base. And so it didn't create that demonizing, polarizing sense of a bias since it was nonpartisan.
So you're saying that you really got people to vote in favor of their self-interest.
Exactly. For once. For once. And hopefully we can continue this in November. It's spectacular.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break. And when we come back, I'll reintroduce our guests for a few announcements.
17 years ago this month, the terrorist attacks opened a rift in our history and partitioned the events of our lives either before or after 9/11. On that same Tuesday morning, a road crew in southern Missouri discovered something that made its own mark in time and revealed tantalizing clues about climate change and the most formidable predator that ever lived in North America. Join us Thursday at 7 p.m. as we explore an ancient subterranean mystery south of Springfield, Missouri, and east of Eden.
21 young plaintiffs are alleging that the United States knew since the 50s that a climate calamity would be the result of a carbon energy economy, yet did little to stop it, in deference to industry. Hear the story on Wings, Saturday at 2:30.
Tuesday is National Voter Registration Day. The League of Women Voters of Kansas City, Jackson, Clay, and Platte counties has special voter registration sites for Missouri residents located throughout the city, including at KKFI 3901 Main Street. To see the full list, go to lwvkc.org. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Okay, we're back. I'm Judy Ansel. We're talking about how we won the Right to Work campaign in August. And with me in the studio is Katie Graham, Sharon Pettiford, and Brian Simmons. And on the phone from St. Louis is Richard Von Glahn. And before we broke, I gave a bunch of statistics about the vote and how phenomenal it was. And you have a comment, Brian?
I do. So we just spent a little bit of time talking about how this wasn't a partisan issue, but the original The numbers are really telling. I was really kind of surprised that we'd set records. I thought if we won this, we'd be good. We definitely wanted to send a message to the legislature that, hey, keep your hands off this issue going forward. So we knew we needed big numbers. But in my capacity as a regional field director, it was easy to get very pinpoint focused on volunteer turnout and the metrics at that level. And not always see the bigger picture of what's going on at the time. I felt confident as the campaign progressed, but I think it's important to point out that guidance from the state political director, Mary Berry, our comms team director, Jessica Padola, our PR folks, Aaron Shrimp in particular, on the western side of the state, they were doing background work long before the field game ever got up and going. So when this all culminated to the numbers that we see on, after August 7th, it's really important to point out that there was a lot of work done by a lot of people that really helped seal the gaps between the pockets of, Kansas City, St. Louis, Joplin, Jefferson City, Springfield, St. Joe, whatever. There was a lot of work done by people that wasn't necessarily field. That was outreach as well, and they did a fantastic job.
Great. Well, of course, it didn't hurt us that our governor resigned right in the middle of the election campaign, and we're not going to go into Eric Greitens' problems, but one of the things that's interesting is that his dark money pack kept on giving even after he resigned. But I want to talk a little bit about the money. I don't know which one of you, was really paying attention to the money. I think, Richard, probably you were. But, we outspent them. We outraised them 3-1, basically, in the election. And so it raises the question, well, was this just a Greitens play thing? Or did they just give up? Or maybe they just couldn't even raise the money, or what the heck was going on? Richard, you want to take this one?
Sure. So, I've heard the idea that they didn't spend the money. I mean, I like to remind people that they started off by spending, I think, $14 million to try to elect a legislature to pass this law to begin with. So They spent a tremendous amount of money working to even get us to this point. I think once we got started and once we got moving, some of their money is of course harder to track and harder to figure out what they were doing, because you had, you know, the Koch brothers front group, Americans for Prosperity, was sending mailings, and that might not have gone through one of their committees. You had the National Right to Work Committee from Virginia was sending mailings. But what you notice from them is a lot of their communications, it was all coming from outside of the state. It wasn't from people who were based here and had any capacity and relationship with people here. So the money that I think they did spend was just highly ineffective, because voters can tell when I get a mailing from some interest group in Virginia, those might not be people who really have my best interests at heart. In terms of our side and money, you also saw tremendous enthusiasm from individuals and volunteers working to defeat this. And that meant they volunteered both their time, but in a lot of cases, also their treasure. You know, I know people came into our office day after day wanting a yard sign, and we would say to them, hey, if you want to, you can take a sign, but if you want your neighbor to have a sign, will you help us replenish them and make a donation? And almost every single person did, because they wanted us to be successful and they wanted to demonstrate the strong support to defeating Prop A.
I know We Are Missouri made a pitch early on to get people to be monthly donors. And I don't know how many people did it, but I know it was a lot.
I was one.
Yeah, I was one too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, no neutrality here. So speaking of the signs, there was kind of a yard sign war, wasn't there?
They thought.
Didn't they have a whole bunch of signs printed up for in favor of Proposition A? I thought it was Americans for Prosperity.
I don't know exactly who had those. I believe they were done through the Freedom to Work PAC or committee.
Oh, okay.
But I could be wrong on that. So a war, no. We had signs everywhere I went.
We won the war flat out, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We had over 100,000 signs out and around Missouri. Large, small, stickers, you name it, everywhere we went. And by the time after we had gone through the logistics of distributing that many signs, by the time they came out with their sign that eerily looked like our sign, it was almost laughable. So then we would see little things like they would sandwich our sign with two of theirs. I wouldn't call it a war, but it was a fun game for the last couple of weeks.
Well, and I heard that they somehow inadvertently got their signs printed in a union shop.
Well, good for them.
Yeah,
glad they supported union labor.
Yeah. It's nice of them, right? Anyway, okay. So it wasn't just unions for sure who were doing the volunteering and doing the door knocking and all of that kind of stuff. And by the way, I forgot to mention that the campaign has said that you knocked 870,000 doors and made a million phone calls, because there were phone banks going on the whole time too.
Right. Correct.
Yeah. And finding the volunteers to do all of that is just phenomenal. But there were also a lot of allied organizations. And, Richard, I know that you did a lot of that work, reaching out to community organizations. Can you talk about it and some of the things that those allies did and why?
Sure. So we spent time and we traveled across the state and ultimately trained over 120 representatives of other organizations outside of the labor movement on what Proposition A was and what it meant to them. So we really spent time talking about what is the impact of Proposition A. What does it mean in terms of wages? What does it mean in terms of access to health insurance? What does it mean in terms of access to retirement security? And frankly, what are some of the disproportionate impacts on certain groups of workers, including workers of color and women? And what that did is it allowed groups to see their own self-interest in what Proposition A was. And so you saw groups coming out and saying, we oppose Proposition A, not just because it's going to drive down wages, but it is going to disproportionately drive down wages for African-American workers. Or we oppose Proposition A because we know that in states that have adopted laws like this, the uninsured population is at least 2.5% higher. So groups were able to see their own mission and their own values in the threat that Proposition A represented. And that really allowed people not just to come to the defense of perhaps an ally and a partner in the labor movement, but to actually speak to their members about their values and their self-interest, and to see Proposition A through that lens. And I think that was just incredibly important and successful in turning out a large number of community allies to vote against this.
Can you name some of those groups?
Sure. I mean, there were certainly groups like Missouri Healthcare for All. There were groups like the Missouri Sierra Club that stepped up. There were groups like Planned Parenthood that came out. There were groups like the Baptist Convention, the Ecumenical Leadership Council, the Organization for Black Struggle. Lots of different groups around the state were able to see how Proposition A represented a direct threat to their communities.
Okay, so let's take one of those. Take the Sierra Club. You know, what was their interest in right to work?
Sure. For the Sierra Club, they look at this and say, you know, workers, and when you have, you often have businesses that are based in communities where workers live. And the number one front line about protecting communities from perhaps pollution or leakage of something dangerous in the community are the workers at that business. They are the ones who are on the front line. But if they don't have a voice, if they don't have protection on the job to be able to speak about those things, then our entire community becomes more vulnerable to what could happen. So for the Sierra Club, they recognize that workers are often the people on the front line of environmental protection and saving our communities from environmental degradation. And so their members were able to hear a message about that and understand Proposition A as a threat to their communities and the health and safety of their communities.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. So we're sort of getting to the end here, and I want to draw out some of the lessons of this campaign and where we're going forward. So what do you guys think are the lessons? What should labor learn? What should other progressive organizations learn from this campaign? Anybody?
Sure. I would say labor needs to continue to focus on, for one, internal organizing. Labor's members need to understand the value that their organizations provide. In addition to that, one of the big challenges is a lot of working class people just don't find the time to engage in political anything within their state. But they need to understand that while they're not organizing around those issues or paying much attention to them, there is organizing from the other side that's actively working against them to stack the deck and not in their favor. So I think one of the take-homes for labor is make sure you continue your internal organizing and your internal education programs, your member-to-member contact, because it's key when we have to rally like we did to have a turnout like voting on Prop A on August 7th. So,
okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, I'll go. I think to follow up with what Brian said is that not only should there be internal organizations to make sure that labor will still continue to have a voice, because it's seemed that the opposing factors and entities wanted to shut down their voices and the voice of the people of Missouri especially. And so I think that everybody just needs to take away the fact that, one, we can and will all work together, and that the other side, you know, whoever is going to choose to work against working people actively, we will put up a fight. It doesn't matter how many times this happens. We'll continue to organize. We'll continue to educate. And I think that the constituency, everybody just needs to be mindful of who they're voting into office and know that their voice matters regardless of what people are telling you and regardless of how many polling locations are being closed down all over the country, to, you know, regardless of racism, there's a plethora of things. Our voice matters. And so I think if we all work together continuously and not stop and go, we can continue to hit this out of the park in November.
Sharon, did we learn anything about race in this and the relationship between labor and particularly the black community?
I think they learned some valuable lessons here, and I think that I am encouraged from the lessons that labor learned here, and I think that they're taking care of lessons that have gone unnurtured for a long time. We're starting to nurture those relationships.
You know, Reggie Thomas from the Laborers Union told me that
he
played really awesome work in this, as well as Pat Jones, in bridging some of the gaps with the black community and particularly between the building trades. But he said it was a wake-up call to the unions.
It was.
What they learned. And can you explain that at all?
I think that that the perception is that labor lives in a bubble away from the community, and I think that there was like a divide there. I can't speak to like specific things with building and trades or whatever.
Right, because you're not from building and trades.
Absolutely, but I think that if we learn anything, that the people voted their paycheck and that the ballot spoke.
Well, actually, some of the results from the black precincts, I haven't seen the details, but they went overwhelmingly against Proposition
A.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people feared that it was going to be the other way, but in fact, the black community clearly understood what right to work meant. Go ahead, Richard.
Okay. Judy, I would say, and this ties into your last question as well, I think one of the lessons that I hope the labor movement learns from this is that when we were talking about this, we were talking about the impact on all workers. And that's important for the labor movement to be seen as a movement for all workers. If the labor movement allows itself to be pigeonholed and said, well, that's just that worker, or that's just that worker, it's not about you, then we're going to lose. And I think it's important that the labor movement continue to stand with other communities when we fight against bills that do things like weaken non-discrimination protections in this state, or what the labor movement's doing right now, standing up and strongly supporting Proposition B, the effort to increase the minimum wage across the state of Missouri. Most union members don't make minimum wage.
Right, they do much better.
But they are standing for the entire community, that we want to make sure that all workers in this state deserve dignity and respect. And I think when the community sees that leadership out of the labor movement, they'll continue to stand by us.
Well, good. You just answered my next question, and this is good because we're almost out of time, which is November and how we take these lessons and what we've built in the campaign against Proposition A into the elections in November. Anybody have any comments about what we need to be doing? Yeah, Brian?
Absolutely. So it's important for us to continue to get out and knock doors and support candidates that came out and supported us. We're going to need them in Jeff City more than ever, because some of the incumbent members of the legislature that were involved in putting this before us in the first place have already signaled that come January after the midterm, and they're going to file right to work again.
We may have to do the whole thing all over again?
Well, hopefully we can avoid that by turning over some seats in the House and the Senate and evening it out so that they can have those fights in Jeff City and they don't have to drag the rest of the state into it.
So there needs to be some payback.
Well, there always needs to be some payback.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we've been
finished the job.
We've been talking to Katie Graham, Sharon Pettiford, Brian Simmons, and Richard Von Glahn about the August right to work defeat, which was a great victory for labor. And I want to thank you all for being on the show. It's really instructive.
Thank you, Judy. We've missed you.
Thank you, Judy. It was a great victory for all workers.
Absolutely. It really was.
It really was.
It really was. And it should be an inspiration for getting out there in November. So thank you all very much. And stay tuned for Know Your Rights with Angie.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good evening, Kansas City. This is Angie Williams with the law offices of Angela L. Williams with another edition of Know Your Right. In light of the strike at McDonald's related to sexual harassment, I thought I'd talk a little bit about striking in general, what the laws are around it, and when it's legal and when. So for those of you that don't know, a labor strike, legally, the definition is when workers collectively agree to stop working in order to gain some sort of concession from the employer. This happens usually when there's some dissatisfaction with a working environment or after contract negotiations have broken. And if it's a labor union, also the majority of workers in the bargaining unit have voted to strike. Both striking and picketing are actually protected activities under the National Labor Relations Act. But there are certain conditions and various degrees of these. Some of them are. The most common time when a strike is illegal is if there is a labor contract in place and there is something called a no-strike clause in that labor contract. A no-strike clause is just that. It's a part of the contract that specifically states that workers won't strike during the time that the labor contract. These types of no-strike clauses essentially make any type of striking illegal for the whole time that the contract's in place, except for one specific incident, and that's if there are abnormally dangerous working conditions. A lot of strikes arrive in a workplace because there are disagreements about wages or hours or time off, raises, promotions, health benefits, retire benefits, or in the case of the one that we're talking about, pervasive allegations of sexual harassment in the work. They can also arise if there's unsafe working conditions or if there's some sort of unfair labor practice or if what the company is doing violates state or federal or even local law. So for a strike to occur, the union or the group of workers needs to start negotiation with the employer and essentially threaten a strike, that the workers are going to walk off their job if some condition is not. If it's a union situation and a strike is going to occur, the union leaders need to call for the strike and then a majority of the union members need to vote on it and vote in favor for it in order for it to occur. Now, each individual union has specific rules related to that, but that's kind of a general idea of how. So, under the National Labor Relations Act, workers typically cannot be fired for going on strike, but that is only if the strike is a lawful strike. The National Labor Relations Act protects the rights of workers to strike and prohibits employers, for terminating employment for exercising this right. But, like I said, you have to make sure that it's a legal strike. Another big issue about striking is that there's no law saying that workers will get their usual paycheck from their employers while they are on strike. Some unions may have money that's available to help fund strikes and pay workers that are on strikes but these come from individual unions. The employer will generally not give the employee a paycheck. Even though their job is protected, they won't be getting their paycheck during that time. Some unions also provide things like strike benefits, which also help maintain insurance, like health insurance, throughout the time that a strike is happening. Generally, striking workers can't collect unemployment benefits while they're on strike. There are a few specific exceptions to that. For example, if you're someone who is not striking but still lose your job because of the strike, you may in fact be able to collect benefits, but just someone who is striking is not going to be able to. Similarly, some states allow for unemployment benefits if it's an employer-initiated lockout. Now, a lockout is a temporary withholding or denial of employment. That means the employer is saying, I'm not going to give anybody jobs or you can't come to work. And this happens during a labor dispute with the goal of gaining some concession or some leverage against the worker. This is kind of the opposite of a strike. A lockout is something that's initiated by the employer rather than initiated by the workers or the union. So, like I said, if there's an employer-initiated lockout, some states allow people to collect unemployment benefits during that time. Finally, one final thing about strikes. If you're a public employee, you need to check the laws in your state. Right now, there's only 11 or 12 states that allow public employees to strike. Most states prohibit it. So if that's something that you have an issue with and you're an employee of a public place, you need to check your laws in the state. That's all the time we have right now. Tonight, Kansas City, this is Angie Williams with the Law Offices of Angela L. Williams with another edition of Know Your Right. Stay safe.
And now for the Heartland Labor Forum calendar. The Unplaza Art Fair will be this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Actually, I think it's from 8:30 to 4 p.m. And that'll be at Southmoreland Park. It's not at All Souls. They moved it last year to Southmoreland Park, which is right across from the Nelson Atkins Museum between Oak and Warwick. And it's an alternative to the super high prices of the Plaza Art Fair, and it's kind of fun. Who and what's on the ballot November 6th? This is a forum, Monday, September 24th, 5:15 p.m. to 7, and it's sponsored by Heartland Alliance for Progress. It'll be at Californos at 4124 Pennsylvania in Kansas City, Missouri. 10 days of Trans Demands Workplace, Kansas City. Monday, October 1st, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Kansas City United Church of Christ, 205 West 65th Street, in KCMO, sponsored by the Missouri ACLU. Tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. Our show is called WOBS, that's Wobblies or IWW in KC, and Exploring the Psychology of Obedience. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman. Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to Heartland Labor Forum KKFI at gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM KKFI. The conditions where you've come.